Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B.
Today's guest is Joshua Ressweber, 24 years of combination experience, recently promoted battalion chief on the A shift with Port Arthur Fire Department in Texas. Joshua was into sports and had no intentions of becoming a firefighter. But like so many others I've had on here, it was a friend of his that introduced him to the fire service. Once he got his foot in the door, as the adage goes, that's all she wrote, and Joshua fell in love with it. Joshua spoke straight truth bombs and facts in this interview. Standards and personal accountability can go a long way within your career, as well as being able to be open and transparent with yourself. Joshua's mindset and how he views the job is a must hear, and I hope you all enjoy the conversation. With that, I present Joshua Ressweber.
Josh Ressweber, been in the fire service for 24 years. Started out at Lumberton Volunteer Fire Department when I was 18 years old. Did 5 years there. And with those 5 years, my last year and a half, I was lucky enough to get hired on by Port Arthur Fire Department. And I've been with Port Arthur Fire Department for 20 years. Recently got promoted to battalion chief on A shift. And throughout that time, I've done some side jobs with different fire departments and volunteered where I live at now for a little while, which is out in Mauriceville, just north of Orange, Texas.
Okay. All right. And was the fire service always something you wanted to do? Has it always been in your radar, or did you just kind of stumble upon it?
Actually, no. Growing up, I never really thought about being a fireman. I mean, how that started was a friend of mine. We graduated high school. I had a college plan. That kind of fell through. So I went to work in road construction right out of high school. And him and a friend of mine that I went to high school with, they volunteered at the fire department. And they said, hey, man, you ought to come down and check it out. So went down on a Tuesday night. I'll never forget. They were doing air pack training. So just kind of got thrown into that. You know, I was big into sports. So I really enjoyed the team concept of stuff. And my first day of training was an air consumption drill. And I fell in love with it. Like I went head first after that, really enjoyed it.
Okay. All right. So if you can, once you realized like, hey, this job is jam up, what were your next steps in order to, you know, to start getting your foot in the door?
So, you know, being young at that time, just trying to make some money, I stayed a volunteer for 3 years. And since I was really active, they put me through my EMT program. They actually paid for that. And then I just started deciding, you know, I could really do this for a living. And I found out a lot of people don't question themselves on this. And I really had to have an internal discussion with myself was, you know, do I want to do this as a career guy to where I have to go to every call when I go to work? You know, was I willing to take a chance that I may have to put my life on the line, regardless if I wanted to go or not? And so, I mean, it took about 6 months of me having some internal discussions with myself over that. And finally, I came at peace with it, knew that was something I really wanted to do. And took out a bank loan, of all things, to put myself through the fire academy. And when I went through the fire academy, Port Arthur was testing. Back then, they did not hire certified guys. So me and my buddy went down there. We tested. He scored 2. I scored 3. He got hired on a month before me. But I got the phone call. And, you know, rest is history pretty much.
Okay. All right. Before I get into the meat and potatoes of, you know, your whole fire service history and experience, can you tell the listeners a little bit about Port Arthur that for those that don't know, including myself?
Yeah, so Port Arthur is right where Texas and Louisiana meet, right at the Gulf of Mexico. So we do have, I think it's the third largest port in the country when it comes to the amount of tonnage that is shipped through our waterways. The Intercoastal Canal runs through Port Arthur, so we got a lot of water. It's a real old city. We're surrounded by industry, so we got some of the top refineries and top chemical facilities that kind of encircle our community. Roughly 60,000, I think, is how many citizens we have, but we get a lot of travel in and out from all the plants that we have in the area. We also have a Coast Guard station out there. The lower part of our city is more lower income, so of course that's where usually most of our fires and stuff like that occur. A lot of World War I, World War II type housing, so your shotgun shacks, shiplap houses, all that on the south end. And then on the north end of our city is all our newer construction. So we get a blend of a lot of truss style, newer open space construction on the north end of our city. And on the south end, we got, the shiplap, shotgun shack style homes. That's pretty much it. I always tell people when I try to recruit for our department, when I talk to the cadets I teach at the academy, is the good thing about Port Arthur is we do everything every major city does except high-rise fires. So if you want to be a diver, we got a dive team. You want to do hazmat, we have that. We do rope rescue, high angle confined space, trench, industrial firefighting, municipal, boats. We do a little bit of everything.
Okay. And how many stations do you have?
We have seven stations currently, and that is seven engine companies. And then we run a truck company that also crosses over as like a squad. So depending on the type of call fires, they hop on the truck and go. Medicals, heavy extrication, hazmat, rope. They take what we call us HR1. So our hazmat rescue or our squad.
Okay. All
So we
right.
got one dual station house that houses engine one and then the ladder company.
Okay. And what's your minimum staffing on each apparatus?
Three. Yeah.
Three. Okay.
Minimum of three.
Okay. Do any of your apparatus ride four?
So if we have extra personnel on shift that day, the fourth guy always goes to the truck.
Gotcha.
And then from there, it'll bleed over to engine one. And then honestly, if we have enough extra people with a company officer, we'll split the truck and the squad and they'll run separate three main companies. But that's a rarity.
Okay. All right. And what is your rank structure like? Meaning, fire department wise, do you have captains, lieutenants, sergeants?
No, sir. So you come in, we got firefighter and we're civil service. So, 2 years you can test and promote to engineer. And then from there you go captain. And then from there you go to the battalion chief rank. And after battalion chief, it's kind of, we got an appointed deputy chief, fire marshal's office, and then, of course, the fire chief.
Okay. All right. And if the captain's off, does the engineer slide over and assume officer responsibilities?
Yeah, so we have an acting list based on the last civil service test that was given. If that test has expired, then they go off of seniority
Gotcha.
as far as acting up.
Okay. And one battalion chief covering seven stations.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So I'm going to go back a little bit. You test, you get hired. What was it like working for Port Arthur? Did you have to go through any sort of recruit academy again, or was it, were they pretty much put you on the truck and they show you how they do things?
When I hired on, it's pretty much you got assigned and they just showed you how they did things. There was no formal training program. Currently, what we do is you hire on, you go through 2 days or 2 weeks of days, Monday through Friday. So you get to take care of all your paperwork, everything with HR, all the IT stuff. And then after that, we created field training captain positions. So you get assigned to a captain for 3 months and you ride extra with his crew. So that captain and that crew, there is a rookie, or I'm sorry, a rookie program. And that captain has to got to train you on those first quarter benchmarks. So you ride 3 months with that company. You knock out your first quarter benchmarks. You do a performance evaluation. And if you're, you know, meeting those standards, then you're released to ride your own position. But then the other captains know they have to continue your training with that second, third, and fourth quarter benchmarks for that first year.
Okay. All right. What was your first assignment?
My first assignment, I got lucky. I was at Station 1 a lot. And in my city, Station 1's the station that goes to all the fires.
Okay.
So I was signed underneath a really aggressive captain. And between him and then Engine 6, I was at 6 a lot. 6 has got had a real aggressive captain. So I just got – they kind of took me under the wing and, you know, we got to go have fun. Made a lot of fires when I was new and hired in.
Okay. Which is good because that right there gets you the experience.
Yes, sir.
Okay. With that, my next question for you is mentorship. Whether or not those captains knew, how important is it for individuals coming into the fire service or those who have already been in to find that person that, you know, they jive with, that they can relate to?
And mentorship, I guess there was a part of mentorship when I hired on. It was an aging department, so it was just kind of what I enjoyed about it looking back. It was kind of, you know, shut your mouth, listen, learn, and let's go to work. You know, let's duck our head, let's go in, let's make a push on these fires. And I learned a lot, and there's some things I didn't learn, you know, that they teach now or they do now with mentorship programs. Something we struggle with in my department, I don't know if it's other departments as well, is kind of losing that senior man.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I've been really pushing hard at my department to some of our firefighters and drivers, is trying to revive that senior man mentality. So you can build those mentorship programs and that mentorship with guys. And you can't beat that, because one thing that kind of disheartened me is I had a guy that had 10 months on the job. He come ride extra with me on the truck, and I'm asking him about a chainsaw, and he didn't know how to fuel a chainsaw. He didn't know how to run a chainsaw. You know, that's something he was never taught growing up. And it blew my mind that in 10 months, no one took the time to sit down and work with that young man.
Right.
And since I've gotten in my new position, that's some of the things that I'm trying to incorporate on my shift is a good mentorship program. Because, I mean, they're more apt to go to that firefighter and that engineer than they are to that captain or to that battalion chief, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I also think that fosters good crew morale. You know, it fosters that tighter brotherhood, sisterhood connection, to where you're not just showing up going to work. You know, you're showing up to go hang out with your buddies. You're going to work to hang out with people you're going to develop a lot of trust with. So that's some things I really think that mentorship program brings.
Definitely. Okay. With that being said, how long did it take for you? It's a two-part question. How long did it take for you to decide to start moving up the ranks, and then why?
So I didn't want to promote. I did 5.5 years as a firefighter. What made me want to promote, unfortunately, is I saw who I was going to be working for in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a different goal in mind than they did. You know, their goal was to come to work and collect a paycheck. And I thought there was a lot more to that. And one example is kind of losing me right now, but one, and I know this seems minor, but we make a little fire that started in, like, these people had the water heater, but it was connected to the outside of their structure, but it shared an exterior wall. And they had a fire get inside that, where that water heater was. It's like a small exterior closet, and it kind of got into the house. So we go in, knock it out, real easy fire. And then I'm taking the hose and trying to drag the hose outside. And one of the guys just uncouples the coupling right there in their house and dumps water all over the floor. And, you know, he made a comment that kind of disturbed me when I said, "Why'd you do that? We could have just drug the hose outside." And he made a comment that really bothered me. And I said, "You know, I want to get in a position to where we don't act like that anymore."
Right.
You know,
right.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, it's the amount of times I've heard, and then I've always, people always, before they say it, they always preface it with, "This is going to sound bad, but I didn't want to work for this or that individual." And that's the thing about fire services. We have people in positions that were like, "I never want to be like that person."
Yes, sir. And I had, like I said, I saw the guys coming up behind us that were going to potentially be my boss. And I don't have nothing against guys that can't dedicate extra time to outside the job, the train. You know, everybody's got, sometimes you got other priorities, you know, family, kids. But when guys just show up to work, and I know you've heard this several times, they'd rather play on their phone or watch TV all day or sit in the recliner. And then you see it when you go to the fire ground. Like, most firemen can handle a one-room fire, and it's easy. But the thing I was noticing in my department with certain guys, if anything got beyond a one-room fire, if certain guys weren't there, it went to crap. And it's because those guys didn't want to learn the job, pretty much.
Right. I get it. Okay. So 5 years, you spent 5 years as a firefighter, and then I'm assuming you moved up to engineer, correct?
Yes, sir.
And then how long were you an engineer for?
So I got lucky as an engineer. After being an EO for about 4 months, I was able to sign on the truck. So in my department back then, we really didn't do a lot of truck work. Basically, the truck went to all the fires in the city, so we didn't have a district. We only had one truck, so you went to every fire. And as the EO, you got there, you bunkered out, you went and got on a hose line, and they were pulled a hose line and went and fought fire with, you know, the other crews. So I got to do that for 3.5 years because I knew my end goal was going to be company officer. That's really where I wanted to get, because I knew as a company officer, that's where you have a lot better chance to start instilling change in your fire department.
Okay.
And so I did that for 3.5 years and then promoted to company officer. So now I got 9 years in, promoted to company officer, and I rode engine one, which is our busiest engine when it comes to fires, for 18 months. And then I got lucky and the truck opened up. The guy had worked underneath for years and had drove for. He had 2 years left, so he moved out to our basically retirement home station. And to sign on our truck, our department requires you to have hazmat tech and rope rescue tech. So I had both those certifications, so I was able at 31, I think, to move directly over to the truck. And when I got on the truck, me, B shift, or at that time I was on B shift, and then A shift's truck captain really wanted to start doing truck work. And that's about the time to where Port Arthur started doing vertical vent, prioritizing search, and really get into the truck activity on the fire ground.
Okay. All right. And that's perfect, because I was getting ready to ask you, how long did it take for you guys to start implementing that engine truck culture?
It took a minute. It was slow at first. Me and another buddy of mine, actually two buddies of mine, we started traveling, started going to conferences, started going, trying to learn more stuff. And, you know, a lot of departments don't do vertical vent. And a lot of guys want to get onto their chiefs and stuff like that about it. And I get it to an extent, but if you take a chief that started out as a firefighter and that department never did vertical vent, that guy knows that his whole career, he put fires out without a vertical vent. So you got to take the time to go teach them and show them why it works. And that's what me and my two buddies did. And thankfully, we had a battalion chief who he just retired. He had 52 years on the job. So back then he had like 38, 40 years on the job. We went and talked to him, and he, it's one of those things, I think you gain respect through your fire service career. And because that guy saw me and these two other guys grow up in the fire department, knew we were aggressive firefighters, knew we had dedicated ourselves to the job, he would let us try things. So he's like, well, if y'all say it'll work, I'll let y'all try it at the next fire. Excuse me. And then we had another battalion chief that was the same way. He's like, you got to prove it to me, and if it works, I'll let you do it. And we made a daycare fire, and the engine couldn't push in because the smoke was pushing out too hard. They couldn't get a line in place good enough to start cooling it down. We went to the roof and cut 2 4x8 holes on each side of the ridge. And the engine captain, to this day, it blew his mind how much lift that was. And the guys walked in and put the fire out. And ever since then, that battalion chief called for a vent almost on every fire. To the point sometimes I'd tell him, hey, chief, we don't need one on this. It's just, the cabinets are on fire. We don't need a vent on this one. But every time he sent us to the roof. And I think success, those successes, and then having the engine captains backing you up because they could actually visually see it. The heat wasn't driving them down. They could dang near walk to the fire most of the time. It started, we, our fire, less of our fires went defensive when we started doing that. So we started getting buy-in that way. And then when we started prioritizing search, so a lot of times, depending on what shift you were, on my shift as the truck captain, when I showed up on scene, I had two decisions to make. Either I'm a search or I'm gonna go vent. And then on the other shift, they had really good engine companies that were really good about getting in there if they weren't first due and searching. So they could go to the roof a lot more. And by us prioritizing search, and I don't know if it was luck. I don't like to think it's luck. I think it's because we were changing the culture of our department. As small as our department was, I think since 2017, we've probably made 15 grabs
Hell
in the
yeah.
last 8 years. And half of those people, 8 or 9 of those people have survived. And I think it's because we changed the culture. It took time, right? Prioritizing that search. Prioritizing the vent, doing everything, all that coordinated with the line getting in. And it's our department fights fire a lot different today than we did 15 years ago.
Right. Okay.
Hope I didn't rant too much.
No, it was perfect, perfect. It definitely sounds like, anytime an organization or an individual that has really good intentions that tries to get change going, it's like change is a very slow progress. But there are two things. The first thing is I like the fact that you had your, I'm gonna call them like your old salt dogs, your senior men who were like, they didn't shut it down. They were like, okay, prove it to me. And then once you got the chance to do that, the results spoke for themselves. The biggest thing for me is getting those salt dogs to just, instead of shutting it down right away, nope, I've done it for this X amount of years. It's always worked. Instead of shutting it down, I wish more of them would be willing to have the conversation and then go, okay, let's go out and do it.
And see, I think, and again, I'm speaking from my world, right? The Port Arthur Fire Department world. So I may not know what other people encounter in their departments, but the true firemen, in my mind, the guys that, they they're just good interior firemen. That's all I can say. It seems like those guys are always more apt to listen. It's the ones that maybe aren't as aggressive or usually have a problem or something on the fire ground. Those are the ones that seem are a lot less apt to listen. And then you can't go into that battle either saying, because I came in the fire when I joined Prof Fire Department, we're pulling 1.5 hand lines with 95 GPM and fighting fire with 30 degree power cones. It worked. Now we didn't know what we didn't know, and to this day, a power cone fire attack will work as long as you got a good vent on the opposite side. Like you got to understand when it works and when it doesn't. And so I wouldn't discount what those older guys say either, because if they came up and, well, this always worked, we got to understand first is why it was working for them. Understand it, study it, and really understand why. Okay, why was it working for them? But then bring in the other factors, about, the thermal layering and bringing all that stuff down on top of the potential victims that aren't cocooned in all that bunker gear. That's why we can take that rebound of that heat. And well, it was working because they had an adequate vent on the other side of fire attack where all that steam and all that smoke could go. Now, what happens if you don't have that vent? When they shut that nozzle down, you're eating all of it. And then I took you take that and you explain, well, if we use a straight stream or a smooth bore, this is the advantages that'll help you out versus that fog attack that you were doing. So you got to walk them through it. You can't completely discount a guy that's been a good fireman for 30 years that goes to fires and he knows, well, this has always worked for me. Okay, I get that, but this may be a little bit better. And then take the time to go out and show them.
No, thanks. Okay. As far as I'm pretty sure I'm going to know your answer on this, but how important is it? And I can't stress this enough, but how important is it for individuals to get outside of the four walls of their organization and go out and attend a conference or a lecture to see the newest techniques and discussions that can make the job easier?
It's very important because there's no professional business, whether it's corporate, and a lot of people bring up sports, but yes, sports, but even the corporate world. If you ain't growing, you're dying. And even in the corporate world, if they don't constantly evolve and change and see what's going on around them to try to keep up with competition, well, 10 years down the road, that business may not exist anymore. And, getting back to sports and NFL, they call the NFL a copycat league for a reason. You got to look at what's working around you and see how it fits your department. Like I said, Port Arthur Fire Department's a prime example of that. Is like I told you before, we got rid of almost all our 1.5 hand lines. We're all 1¾ low pressure fogs and smooth bores. I had a salty captain that he's one of those guys just loves to talk crap. He likes to talk crap all the time. And he was dogging those nozzles and dogging that hose. He made a fire and he pulled that line and he's behind the firefighter and he saw him open that line. And instead of 95 gallons a minute, now he's got 160. And it blew his mind at how fast that fire went out. And now he's saying, well, where's this been the last 20 years? Well, give us a chance. But yeah, getting out, and it's rare for a fire department to have the expertise, especially, one my size, about 110 people, to have the expertise to encounter every issue that's going to come about. And so if you get out and you talk to these people that maybe go to more jobs or maybe encounter that specific issue more than you're going to have the opportunity to in your department, that's how you're going to build your knowledge and your your database to be able to handle that issue when it comes up.
Definitely.
And I always refer to this, though, because I get it. Don't dog the guys, again, I said this earlier, that are good firemen, but due to personal circumstance, can't go to those conferences. When you go to a conference, you're standing up and you're holding your hand up and saying, I choose to be a leader. And when you take that, say, I choose to be a leader because I had the opportunity to go to these conferences, you have to come back and find somebody that'll listen to you and share that knowledge. Whether you always got somebody you can influence in your department, no matter what rank you're in. If you're a firefighter, it can be just your firefighters or that new guy. You know, same thing. Sometimes you can influence up, sometimes you can't. It's all going to depend on how closed or open-minded the people are above you. As a driver, that circle influence is going to open a little more. You know, that just keeps widening the higher you move up in your profession. And, I full-heartedly believe it. It changed me as a firefighter, getting outside of my department.
Yes, sir. Yes, I could 100% attest to that. The amount of knowledge that you can gain, the way you can see things in a different perspective, you can hear somebody's take on it. Like, it just, I don't know. The first time I attended mine, and I came back home, and, you know, I read my notes, or if I can't take notes, I take a picture of the slide and I go back and I read it. It just puts things in perspective. It makes me look at it a different way. And I'm like, oh, now I understand what they were trying to say. And to me, with, you know, you mentioned your department has some old salt dogs. The way fires were burning back then is 100% different than how it's burning now with synthetics and plastics and things like that. So, you know, as years go by, you know, the fire may chemically be the same, but the way it's going to react, the amount of time things off gas, it's changed. And if, like you said earlier, if you're not up with the times, you know, don't be surprised if the fire doesn't go out or individuals, God forbid, get hurt and things like that.
Yeah, my buddies or the guys at work joke with me because when I teach or go over stuff, I always tell them, I said, it always works till it doesn't. And when it doesn't, you got to have a plan B, you know. That's – I lost my train of thought there.
No, you're fine. It'll come back to you. It'll come whenever it does, let me know.
All right.
But I'm going to ask you, in your personal opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
So aggressive is knowledgeable. To me, aggression is while moving, you got to pick a pace that fits you. That no running on the fire ground, I run and some of my guys run on the fire ground. But we got to think about where that running comes in place. Do I want a brand new guy running on the fire ground? Maybe not, because it all depends on how fast you can process information. I'm sorry, what was your question again?
What does the term
aggression?
Aggression. Yep.
So to me, aggression is being able to process what's in front of you as you're moving forward to the fire ground, looking at your smoke, looking at your building, reading your building, looking at your windows, your doors, your vent pipes, and being able to find a way in or looking for a way in versus a way out and a reason to stay out. I'm sorry. So looking for a way to get in versus a reason to stay out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not running through fire. That's what I try to tell guys. Aggression, when I tell you I want you to be an aggressive firefighter, that doesn't mean I want you to duck your head and run through flames. No, if you encounter that, I want you to fix that issue if we can, and then try to push in and get inside the building. If we're doing a 360 and we can identify a room that fire has not gotten into yet, or a room that we believe that we can occupy, if we occupy that one room and get in and perform a search and we lose the building, that's still a win. You know, again, when I came up in the fire service, being a fireman was all about what we have to do to fight the fire. And when we lost the R in RECO somewhere along the way, and we lost the L in life safety somewhere along the way. And that's one thing that I was retaught 10, 12 years ago, is the reason we exist is for the search. And so whatever we have to do has to protect that. And being aggressive in how you choose to do your training, you know, aggression starts back how you show up to work that morning. Everybody wants to talk about safety on the fire ground. If I show up and the first thing I do in the morning is go out to the rig, check all my equipment, check my air pack, check my nozzles, make sure my load is how it is. I crank all my saws. I run all my equipment to where when that tone comes in, I know it's going to work. I know my gear set up how I want it set up. My air pack, you know, it's completely full. It's not at 42, 4100. You've built safety into your operation right at the beginning. And then from that is getting on the fire ground, knowing my equipment is going to work and processing that scene as I approach it. And going back, some of us can move at a fast pace and absorb that information and process it. Some guys may have to go a little slower space to be able to process that information. And then our aggression transitions onto our fire ground skills. So you done checked your equipment. Now, how fast can you stretch that line to get it to the drop point that we need to get nozzle between fire and victims? You know, how fast as a vertical vent are you able to get to the roof and open it up to get lift from the bottom to increase the survivability of bringing fresh air into the bottom of that building and allowing your engine company to make a faster interior attack? And then how fast can you occupy the building and do a search? And one thing that I think the fire service is getting better at is we have to approach a residential structure like a bunch of small boxes. And when we go in and do a search, maybe we can only search one box of that house, which is that bedroom, until conditions can improve to where we can maybe extend our search. But to me, that's what aggression is knowing your job, knowing your skills at a basic level to where you can perform them at any time of day or night, and then looking for ways in versus looking for ways to have to stay out.
Okay.
Like, I want you to be smart. I don't want you to be dumb. Like I tell guys all the time, you know, when I got over my new shift, I told them, I said, we will have a fire first aggressive mindset on A shift. Because I believe if you get firefighting right, if you spend time to get the firefighting side of the job right, then everything else seems to come a lot easier. If you get guys that love to show up to work and train and get out and do the job that requires you of a firefighter, if you get guys good at that, usually they're going to be good at medical. Usually they're going to be good at hazmat. Usually they're going to be good at rope, because they dedicated time to be good at the main portion of their craft.
Definitely. Okay. I don't know how far apart your firehouses are, but I do have a question personally I'd like to ask you. Does your department, do you guys search ahead of the hose line with the can, or no?
Yes, condition dependent.
Okay.
We'll depend on the smoke and the speed of the smoke. For instance, just me explain it this way. When I was a truck captain, my firefighter's job, usually because of where we're located in the city and where most of the fires are, usually we get there right with the first arriving engine company. So my firefighter's job was to go to whatever door of entry the engine company was going to make and force that front door full, and then be a doorman. You know, do your quick live fire layout, call out, quick little sweep. If the smoke's high and light and you can reach in and search that first room, do that. But then I want you pulling hose So the first line don't slow down getting inside the building. Again, we run three main companies. Me as a captain is I would do a quick 360. If I had a chance, I would hit utilities. If I saw a VES opportunity, I would call it out on the radio. But my main goal was to get back to my firefighter, which happened usually pretty quick to initiate primary search. My EO's job was to go to the back of the structure and own the Charlie side of the structure. So he would force that rear door. He would do a quick search inside that door. If that door was not an adequate vent or good vent, he would close it. If it was a good vent, he would leave it open. And he understood from me that if he felt he could enter that space by himself and continue a search, I gave him the authority to do that. If he identified a VES opportunity that I missed, he needed to get on the radio and ask for another EO from another engine company to come over there and assist them. So if it's first floor entry on, window-based search, I say, go ahead and perform that search, but get on the radio and let them know you're going in. If it was something second floor required, then get help and try to get to that second floor. So that's how we broke it up with a three-man truck company. I called that a bread and butter play because you got to have a playbook before you call an audible.
That's
And we had
facts.
audibles. We had audibles. They knew what to do. If I said, hey, we're going straight to the roof, each of them knew what their job was just by me saying we're going to the roof. If I said we're VES and second floor, each individual knew what piece of equipment they were going to grab and what their job was when we entered that space upstairs. But like I said, a lot of our fires are one-story shotgun shack style houses. That was our bread and butter play. And if the smoke was high, not a whole lot of velocity behind it, we'd go in ahead of the line. Black smoke pushing out hard through the front door. We're going to help the line get in place, help that line get to the fire, and then we're going to split search back to the front door.
Okay. All
That,
right.
that's how we kind of approached it.
Okay. Fantastic. As far as leadership, you were a company officer for a long time, and now you're a chief officer. So my question to you is, what kind of leader did you want to be when you finally got to that position, and what does leadership look like to you?
So I'll start off with this is I feel like we forget the number one role of leadership. And the first thing you have to recognize as a leader is you have to tell yourself it's not about you anymore. So when you promote to a captain, it's about your crew. And even if you don't feel like doing something that day, and a crew member comes to you and says, hey, Cap, I want to go do some vehicle extrication today. It doesn't matter if you've worked 5 or 6 days straight at side jobs and whatever, and you come to work, you need to make that happen for that individual. If they want to go and do rope training or search training that day, you have to make yourself available. And another thing is, as you move up through the ranks, you have better learned the job below you. So I should know what that I know what that firefighter is expected to do because I've done that job and I took pride in learning that job. Same thing as a driver. And so when we go out and do training drills, is I'm in gear and I'm in an air pack and I'm out there with them doing it. Because on three-man engine companies, I'm a working boss. And those guys gotta know that I'm willing to sweat, I'm willing to hurt, that I'm willing to do work with them. And that's going to build a better crew. And to me, you got to be there for them off the job too. You got to be there for them professionally and personally. You got to, and then as a company, when I transitioned to chief, it's the same thing. Like, I told all my guys what I saw my job was is to provide you the tools, the equipment, and the freedom to be able to do your job at the highest ability you can. And I try to visit a station once a tour. So we work basically, not going to go over the whole schedule. We work a 9-day rotation. So basically 3 days on with a couple days off in between, and then 4 days off after our last day. So within those 3 24s, I go to a station and I hang out with the crew, and I go out and I do training with them. They've come to expect that. And I think as a chief, you set the example for that shift. So if the guys are going to get out there in gear and do training at the base, you're still a firefighter. For you to be a chief or even a fire chief in the state of Texas, you have to have a firefighter certification. And I think we forget that sometimes, or some people forget that. So if you're out of shape, that's on you. That ain't on anybody else. If I understand as we get older, we may have some things that hurt, or maybe we're a little slower doing things, but then we got to make our movements more purposeful when we do them. And so if the company's out there doing training and you have the time to go do that instead of watch TV, get out with your companies. The type of leader I see myself is I want to be able to do everything in my power to make you successful. Because if I'm making my company successful, if I'm making the firefighters successful, then we're having positive outcomes for our civilians. And in
Sure.
today's world, it matters, the guys, that you care. And so you gotta let them know that you care. So
Beautifully.
that's what leadership is to me,
Yes,
is
sir.
even when it's tough, you gotta take a breath and say, you know what, it ain't about me. I need to get out there and do whatever I can to support those men and women.
No, definitely, definitely. No lies told. And unfortunately, I know some might take offense, but like you said, like you said it perfectly. It's on you. Like I understand. Everyone's in a different season of life. If there are things happening like close to the chest that others may not know. But at the end of the day, what we do. Our physical fitness reflects that. And in this day and age where it's a culture, cancel culture, you got to be careful what you say. I understand that, but we are in a profession where the community looks at us in a different light. And if you're not in the greatest shape of your life, then I think that's when people need to have that self-realization. Just because you don't ride that truck, that you're in a car or you're in an admin role, that doesn't mean anything. Like I'm not saying you gotta go out and train like Arnold or like an Iron Man guy, but you gotta be physically capable of doing a job. And I understand age does play a factor because I would give my dad so much heck when he would like cringe getting up off the floor or I hear his knees like crack. Mine's doing the same thing now, and it's like I get it, I 100% get it. But at the end of the day, I can't let that stop me from at least a little bit of sweat equity. Like we got to be physically fit, and I love the way you stated that. It's on the individual. It's on you.
And what is the public going to expect if I'm driving around in my chief's buggy and I pull up at a fire and I'm the one that has to radio in the fire now? And they're telling me the kid's in their back right bedroom. I ain't waiting for an engine company to show up. I'm throwing my stuff on and I'm getting inside that building. And I know there's guys that won't do that. But again, the reason we exist is to protect our citizens. And that's something else that bothers me is your administration, all your support roles. None of that exists if you do not have fire suppression. Everything the fire department does should be to support fire suppression. Because if you do not have guys out on those trucks making those calls, whether it's fire, medical, hazmat, rope, whatever, your department doesn't exist. So everything administration does needs to turn around, and 95% of their support needs to go to the floor. And again, I got to realize it ain't about them. We have to support those guys, because those guys is what makes that employs them. If you don't have the suppression, then you don't have employment above that. So.
Definitely. Okay. How long have you been a battalion chief before now?
4 months.
Okay.
That 4 months. Yes, sir.
This might be a little too early of a question, but this is a personal question I'd like to ask you. Do you see a difference? Do you see a difference between, used to be you'd ride a truck with other personnel, now you're by yourself in a car. Like, is that an adjustment for you?
It has been a lot more paperwork, I will say that. Yeah, but again, that's why I think it's important to get outside your bubble and make friends outside your department. And I had a couple of buddies that made battalion chief in their departments, and so I called them when I knew I was going to make chief, and I was like, "Hey, what's some suggestions, some recommendations you have?" And they prepared me for it. Like one guy, he told me, he goes, you might be depressed a little bit at first." I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Well, you're the chief now, and you're not out riding the truck, or you and your crew, hey man, let's go do this." And then they take off on the truck and leave. And it's like, it's just you. And you do have your administrative stuff you have to take care of sometimes before you can get out there and get out with the guys. But overall, I didn't think I was going to like it, but so far I enjoy it. I met with my chief, my shift, and I laid out my expectations right off the bat with each captain. And then I also invited all their crews in, and I let them know my expectations. And then at the end, I asked them what their expectations were of me, or if they disagreed with my expectations. And none of them did. The only thing that they had asked is that if I'm gonna have these expectations, is that I make sure that everybody's doing those expectations, enforcing that standard. And I told them, I'm gonna do my best to do that. I can't be at every station every day. That's why I gotta rely on my company officers, but I am gonna get out and visit. I'm gonna get out and train with the other companies, and I'll be able to enforce some of those expectations that I expect. And so far, it's been okay. I think I've commanded 4 fires now. Luckily, all of them have went well. And it does. I just started wearing a camera, and the last fire I made, I think a week ago, I must have walked around that building 10 times because I couldn't stop moving. All the guys were messing with me because I couldn't stop. I couldn't stand still. I'm just pacing. But it's worth it. If sometimes you got to bite the bullet, man. If you want your department to head in a certain way, and you have that vision that you think your department should go at, you got to bite the bullet and promote, because sometimes that's the only way you're going to be able to instill the changes that you want to instill. And that's something I struggled with. I never wanted to get off the truck. I was on the truck for 10 years. And again, having buddies outside the department, guys inside the department talking to me, kind of talked me into taking that battalion chief's test, and I got lucky enough to score one on it. So,
And it kind of goes back to the, if not me, then who?
yeah, and sometimes you got to eat your words too, because one of the guys came up to me. He's like, "Come on, man, you got to take that test. Remember, it ain't about you." I was like, "Yeah, you're right. You're right. Okay."
Firemen will be firemen, that's for
Yeah.
sure. Okay. All right. With that being said, are you an engine or a truck guy?
Oh. I'm a truck guy, but I will not knock the engine.
Okay.
I believe it's a progression, and I want to be careful here because I don't want to catch any flack, but the engine company's got a very important job. I think there's less skill sets required for the engine company, And I think once you get really good at the engine company stuff, the next step would be moving over to the truck. And the reason why I enjoy the truck so much is I enjoy searching without a hose line. I enjoy making that decision and searching ahead of the line. To me, how our truck operated in my city is based on conditions dictated the job I was going to be performing. So that could be helping the line get to the fire. That could be searching ahead of the line. That could be window-based search. That could be going to the roof and vent. And I loved all those options. And it may just come down to the type of person I am. Like, I like to support people and see them succeed. So as a truck company, that's what you're doing. You're supporting the engine to help them succeed. So.
Definitely. And I only ask that because I am now going back to the engine. I made at my department, it's called a lieutenant's position, but it really is you're the chauffeur and you play substitute when the captain's off. So
Okay.
I'm transitioning going back from I was on a truck for 3 years. And our departments slowly we're getting that engine truck culture, like we are moving that way. The needle is pointing in that direction, which is a win for
Awesome.
us. But I will say I agree with what you said. I'm not trying to downplay what the engine company does because it is an important role. If you can't stretch, you can't botch that line. Like you got to stretch that line right. You got to be able to make the call where you think the fire is, where it's going. But one thing through going to these conferences and these lectures, I used to think it was the engine company's job is to put the fire out, point blank, period. And while I stand by that, I also have realized to me, that's changed. The engine company's job is to support the search. That's
Yes.
where now going through these lectures and these conferences, I've understand. I used to think, yep, just put the fire out. We're good. High five each other. Let's back the line out. Nope. It's more than that now. It's okay. Where is the fire? Okay. How close is the next search company? Are they right behind us? Do we need vent? We need to coordinate that. Like my eyes have opened and I now understand, like I have more knowledge on it's simply more than just putting the wet stuff on the red stuff. There is an actual science behind it. So I 100% agree the autonomy when you're on a ladder company to like it's just you have more freedom. Like I would tell my captain, "Hey, I'm going throwing ladders." And he's like, "Okay, go." Like
Yeah.
I don't feel like I'm tethered to that line. I can do so much more. So I agree with you, but I'm not trying to throw my engine brothers and sisters under the bus, but hopefully they realize it's more than just putting the fire out and high-fiving. There's a lot more to it.
Little searching off the line, and that man, that line makes or breaks a fire when it comes to the engine company. And I'm gonna tell you, if I'm searching ahead of the line, the last thing I always did before I went into the buildings, I always looked back and saw how the stretch was going. Because if it was a good engine company and I knew who was stretching that line, I knew they were going to have a good stretch. I knew they were going to be behind me pretty quick with water, right? Something to support me and protect me on my search. And on those fires, I'll push the envelope. Maybe I'll go a little farther than I should have because I knew that the engine company was behind me and they had my back. Now there's certain engine companies that, we all got them. I look back and see the spaghetti next to the engine and they're trying to work through their stretch. And, I may not push that envelope as far with that company because I don't know if I can trust when they're going to have water to back me up and protect me. So, and I will say this, like I said, I bounce back and forth is, fires will go out without a truck company. So the engine company is the number one responsibility of getting water between victims and fire and protecting that space. But what should just make it a lot easier when you got a truck company up top cutting a hole for you
Yeah.
know?
Yeah. I mean, you can't refute what lift and ventilation does when used properly at a fire. Like, when that heat's banking you down, or you hear on the radio, zero visibility, high heat, we can't find the fire. That should be an indication right there. We need a vent hole cut ASAP so we can help that crew inside find that fire. Because in my experience, reading most NIOSH reports, line of duty deaths, those are always the words you hear on the radio. Can't find the fire, high heat, zero vis. Those are always key indicators right there.
And I'll tell you, whoever's listening, as you start instilling some of these positive changes in your department, like one thing that always makes me smile now is hearing the engine captains calling for vertical vent. You know, now the engine captains are like, hey, we need a hole in this one, you know, because now they see the difference. And that's, you know, that's part of that organizational shift, you know, that cultural shift.
Definitely, definitely. Okay. When it comes to wellness and truly being there for one another, you hit one example earlier how when you knew you were getting made to battalion chief, you reached out to some friends of yours. Like you have a support system that can tell you things sometimes whether you want to hear it or not, but definitely whenever you need advice. The fire service definitely has a brotherhood. For me, unfortunately, I realized the fire service has a lot of brotherhood when it comes to a tragedy, an injury, but when it comes to actually being there for one another, I feel like some organizations, some individuals are falling short there. You know, like we always do what we're supposed to do when it comes to a death or some sort of injury, but when it comes to just checking up on each other, that's where I feel like we fall short. So what is your take on that?
I think it's the same. And I think, you know, part of it may be societal, you know, all the distractions and all the stuff we have nowadays, and we did, you know, even before my time. I, again, talking about Port Arthur Fire Department, I think that's something that for the most part we're doing all right with is, you know, we had a guy get injured. Basically broke his back. He was off of work for a year and a half. And this guy loved the job. And he's one of those guys that loved the job so much that you started getting a little worried because he wasn't able to come to work for a year and a half, you know. And so we took time out to call him, include him. So I'm, you know, I'm a member of a Fools chapter. And so we would still invite him out to some of our Fools events, you know, for lectures and stuff like that to help him stay involved while he was going through, you know, all the stuff he was going through. But yeah, I mean, nowadays, even a simple text message to someone, you know, just to check up on them, see how they're doing. And I try not to get too personal, but that's one thing I, you know, I'll ask my guys, everyone, you know, how's your kids, you know, how are your kids doing, you know, try to remember their name, see where they're at, you know, try to find out the sports they're involved in, you know, if their wife works, try to remember what kind of job they do, just kind of in passing, ask how it goes. And I feel like a lot of guys, you know, typically we're going to hide things, but at least you're opening up that avenue that if something is going on, they can let you know. And you can tell if a guy's had a bad day or night at home. You know, that's one thing about me is where our department was at a time, I wouldn't have a lot of guys come work with me because I like to train and I was very particular on checking our equipment and making sure our stuff worked. But, you know, right off the bat, one thing I always told one of my guys is, hey, if you had a rough night at home, you got a new kid or, you know, or something happens between you and your wife, you can always come to me and say, hey, Cap, you mind if I, you know, knock out my stuff in the morning and maybe hit the rack for a couple hours. I didn't get much sleep last night. And I would afford them that, you know, as long as you don't abuse it, you know, give them that right because, yes, training is very important. But if they don't have the mental or physical capabilities to perform on the fire ground that day, then we need to try to provide that to them. Yeah, get out, reach out, talk to your guys. And build that network. One thing I try to tell people is about me is I'm the I'm the product of probably 50 to 100 people that chose to invest something in me. And that's something our newer guys have to understand is seek out those people that are willing to invest something or teach something to you. Because no one is self-made in the fire service. You have to, someone has to believe in you and invest in you. And so you need to reach out, ask those questions, look for those opportunities. And the biggest thing you can be in the fire service is be available. Make yourself available for opportunities. And then once you have those people that are invested in you, you need to make a promise to yourself that you're not going to let those people down. Because we're all standing on the shoulders of people that came before us. We're all just a different mixture of that information that or that knowledge or that time that was invested into us from those different individuals to make us who we are as firefighters. And we have to keep that progress going. We have to keep that going.
Yes. Okay. I always like to ask the guests, where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up?
Man, I'm happy where I'm at now. I'll be honest with you. I love being a pulled off fireman. I get to teach at a fire academy, so I stay involved in that because not just for the students, but also for the instructors I hang around, because I'm gonna be able to stay on top of the new innovative methods and technology and techniques that are coming out by staying with a fire academy. And I also teach up at Teeks. And we had Bryce on before, and Bryce is one of the guys we teach an engine company class up there. And again, I'm surrounding myself with people that are a lot better than me. And by being a part of all those groups, that keeps me involved. But I really don't see myself going anywhere. Of course, I'm content right now. I don't think I'll ever want to be a fire chief over a whole department because there's this, I don't think I'll do well with politics. With a battalion chief position, I'm protected under civil service. And so I can make changes. I can do certain things that may be considered unorthodox for certain chiefs, but I'm protected. It doesn't come down to whether a council or something like that likes what I'm doing or not. You know, I'm protected under that civil service.
No, I get it. I get it. Because I mean, I was kind of questioning whether you're going to say, at some point, maybe I'd go for fire chief, but I 100% understand your reasoning why you don't want to.
And even, in Texas, I don't know how it is where you're at, but we have ESDs, emergency service districts, and those chiefs are governed by an elected or an appointed board, depending how the ordinance is written up for that district. And so that board cannot like you and you're gone. And now what? So I like to have that safety net of protection that civil service gives me for that.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I try to whenever I can remember. There's lots of names, but I like to give credit where credit is due. I would have not been able to have you come on without Bryce nominating you. So obviously, Chief, what you're doing, individuals know who you are. They see the value in what you're trying to do and how you're trying to leave it definitely better than you found it. So I'd like to thank Bryce Campbell for introducing me to you and for you coming on and graciously accepting and definitely dropping some truth and nuggets for others to hear. So, Chief, obviously keep doing what you're doing. People are seeing exactly the positive impact you're having, and I truly, truly thank you for coming on and accepting this invite.
Oh, thank you. I hope I did well.
I mean, it's not a pass or fail. Like you did phenomenal. Like I love talking to people that you know they don't shy away from the hard conversations. They're gonna tell it to you like it is, professionally as can be. And you know, you definitely dropped some facts. I loved hearing your experiences and how seeing that evolvement of, you know, a member with 20 something years of service is going out to conferences. They're, you know, they're going out and sitting at lectures, obtaining knowledge. They're not hiding behind tenure or rank. And I think that is a culture killer in the fire department when you have members who have tenure or rank that kind of look down like, I'm not gonna go to this outside. Who's this person? Like, you know what I mean? Like I love the fact that you're still open and willing and you go to these things to bring back and obtain more knowledge.
Well, this has been said many times. You know, I've been humbled, and if you haven't been humbled on this job, just wait 5 minutes. You'll be humbled. When I came up through the fire service, Port Arthur, we were aggressive, sometimes dumb aggressive, but you learn stuff from that. Like it was stay low and go, eat the heat. And put the fire out. And we put a lot of fires out, but we got driven out of a lot of fires too. Because again, now I understand we were flowing 95 gallons a minute. But what opened my eyes is when I made captain, and we called them rovers. Some departments call them swingers or whatever. I didn't have a assigned station. So I just moved where the open slot was, either vacation relief or Kelly Day relief. And we made a fire in sixes, and we get there, and I had a firefighter that wasn't the best, and I did something I shouldn't have as a captain, is I took the nozzle and I made an entry on this house, and it had black pressurized smoke down to about a foot of the threshold. I didn't know any better, so I pushed in as a company officer. Had two guys behind me. I didn't know they had left me after I'd made it a couple rooms in. And I remember army crawling and it being so hot. And finally, I get to the third room in and I'm like, you know what? I know I don't see fire, but I got to open this nozzle. So I open the nozzle. I flowed for maybe, you think it's a minute, but I probably only flowed for, 20 seconds. So probably put what, 25 gallons of water in the atmosphere, and it doesn't cool down, and I just can't figure out why is this not going right. And thankfully, our battalion chief at the time, I heard him on the radio. He started calling, "Hey, everybody out of the structure! Everybody out of the structure!" And I get out, and that's when I realized the two guys that went in behind me, they something had happened, and they weren't with me. They were outside. I come out, and 5 to 10 seconds later, all three of those rooms flash over. My only training at that time was the basic fire academy and what I learned at the Port Arthur Fire Department. And right then, as a company officer, I sat there right there and I said, I don't know how to fight fire. There's something going on that someone didn't teach me or I didn't learn, because I just put myself and two or three other guys in a very uncomfortable and dangerous position. And that opened my eyes and kind of hit me hard, to my soul and to my heart, because I'm responsible for people now. And what started my journey is I had a buddy of mine that was a Beaumont fireman. He'd been trying to teach me this nozzle forward stuff, and I kept brushing him off because that's not what we do in Port Arthur. And the next day, we both worked at a side job at a training company. And like a day or two later, I was working with him. I said, "Hey, Mike, why don't you come show me some of that nozzle forward stuff?" So it went from that, and it went to reading smoke. And then I got really, really hungry, because then I wanted to know everything. Because I always took pride in being the guy that gets to do the cool shit instead of the guy watching the guy doing the cool shit, And so that made it very personable to me to start my education. And I'm happy where I'm at now, but I wish I'd have started that in my 20s. I was 31, 32 years old before I started learning and learned what UL and FSRI and all that stuff was. And now it's like you're looking through a keyhole and now someone opened the door for me. And you can just see so much more and learn so much more. So that's kind of where my training background and my passion for learning came from.
Definitely. I 100% understand you. 'Cause my transition was 4 years ago when I was 36, and I wish I knew what I know now back then. 'Cause back then when you're young, you get a couple fires under your belt, you get some seniority, you think you've got it, and you really don't. Because the stuff I'm learning now, I'm like, oh, I didn't understand it like that back then. And it's just so I agree with you. I wish, and maybe those conferences weren't around back then. I know that they're popping up now. I mean, hell, you live in a state where there are conferences left and right. You don't even have to leave the state of Texas. You just got to either fly or drive there. And it's awesome to see how certain states have embraced these micro conferences, these cadres. It's just awesome to see how the fire service will no doubt help future generations, hopefully as long as this thing keeps going.
Yeah, it's awesome to see the love of the job as strong as it is now. And the brotherhood, that's what I tell my guys. I mean, the brotherhood exists. You just got to open your eyes. It's out there. And it
Definitely.
can be in our own department. That's one thing I told my captains. I was like, we had this meeting. I said, I want a good, strong culture. And I said, and it starts with you, company officers. I was like, because I ain't at your stations every day. So if you want good morale and a good culture on A shift, y'all have to build that. And I'm here to assist y'all and help y'all make that happen. But
For
yeah,
sure.
it's the fire service is doing really well right now.
Yes, definitely, definitely. And like I said, Chief, I appreciate you coming on. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation.
Same here, man. I appreciate you, brother. I don't know if I'll ever meet you in person, but I hope to do so one day. And you're doing an awesome thing. I love how you're getting out and reaching out to people and spreading the message and helping people realize that we're all the same. We're just here to help each other out.
Definitely. Absolutely. I appreciate you, buddy.
Yes, sir.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.